It's here, the Omaha Steaks Cyber Sale. And there's no better time to score big savings on unforgettable gifts. USDA certified tender steaks, beefy burgers, premium air-chilled chicken, and so much more. There's something for everyone on your list. Don't wait. Shop now to save 50% site-wide and an extra 20% off select packages at omahasteaks.com. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Hurry, sale ends December 2nd. Terms apply. See site for details.
The 401 Files explores the world of the unexplained, cryptids, and more. Subscribe now to the 401 Files on YouTube and join the adventure into the unknown.
Hi everyone and welcome to Paratalk. On this episode, this is kind of a bit of a special thing. I wanted to get Bruce on because he's a little bit of a aficionado when it comes to abductions and aliens, but he's also got a very well-informed scientific background. Hi Bruce, how are you?
Reeves, I'm very well. It's great to finally meet you and thank you for having me on your podcast. And for also turning the dial for the paranormal spectrum to UFOs and alien encounters for this evening. Appreciate the chance.
I love a good UFO story. I kind of decided that I needed to get you on an episode because I heard you on another podcast. It really intrigued me what you were talking about because, I mean, not only are you an author and you've written books and it's kind of from a scientific background as well, but you're also an experiencer. And I just wondered, where did all that start?
Well, you know, I really was interested in the subject of UFOs for a brief period during my early childhood. Then when I became, you know, as I advanced into the early teen years, that was replaced by fascination with the manned mission to the moon. You know, here in the States, we're planning on sending astronauts to land on the moon. As I entered college and even beyond the college years, I maintained some interest in the UFO phenomenon, but read a book here and there on the subject. But then what happened in the 80s, just as I was, I received my PhD in neuropharmacology and started a postdoctoral research position at the top cancer research center in the States, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York City. In the middle of all that, all these great books were coming out by the pioneering UFO alien abduction investigators, principally Bud Hopkins, Dr. John Mack, the Harvard psychiatrist, David Jacobs. And I'd read all of these books and was just startled. I couldn't get over the fact that not only were all these accounts of hundreds and thousands, even thousands of people who thought they were abducted by aliens, were so compelling and so believable, and there was such a consistency from narrative to narrative to narrative. But not only that, I literally, when I look back at my life and I look back at the strangest experiences I had as a child, I could actually check all the boxes in what I was seeing as in these great books as what I call the core alien abduction scenario. And so I had to come to the conclusion, not only was the phenomenon of alien abduction real, but I also had to conclude that it happened to me. But in the early 80s, at the start of my career, I didn't know how I could share this, my own personal story of, interaction with alien beings, with a non-human intelligence. Whitley Strieber, I guess, was the first to come out also in the 80s with his personal account, but I didn't know how I could replicate that myself at such an early stage in my career. I knew that I would be taking a great risk at sacrificing my opportunity to get funding for my research, and I know that my applications that I submitted to National Institutes of Health will be looked at quite with a very hypercritical eye if they knew that I was also publishing books about alien abduction. So fast forward a few decades, and I'm at the end of my career, and now we're in the midst of what I was hoping would be an impending disclosure by our U.S. government and military about all the things they know, which we all presume are much more than you and I and all the people that are following this phenomenon, you know, among the private citizens, know. And I thought this was an appropriate time to be the first mainstream scientist to publish a first-person account of interactions with alien beings and experiences with UFO close encounters.
As a child, when did you start to think that something weird was going on?
Well, it happened at the age that is most commonly reported to be the age that abductees have their first experience, their first encounter. I was 6 years old. And it was the classic abduction scenario. Lying in bed, it's late June or late July, 1961. Incidentally, 2 months before the first reported alien abduction ever came out in print, the Betty and Barney Hill abduction. And that was in September up in New Hampshire in 1961. But I was just drifting off to sleep, and then something like a flash of light caught my eye. And out of the corner of my eye, I thought I saw a glint of sunlight reflecting off an object outside my bedroom window. Looked out the window and saw the strangest looking airplane I'd ever seen before. It looked like more round than tubular. I thought I saw wings, but again, it was fascinating. It was silent. It was moving just over the rooftops of the apartment buildings in our neighborhood, maybe 5 or 6 blocks away from where I was. And ordinarily, I would be so fascinated to watch this strange object in the sky, but did something very uncharacteristic. I, almost as if under command, I turned my head away from it and immediately went to sleep. When I woke up, I was no longer in my bedroom. I was lying on a table, looked like an examination table in a hospital. This is what I surmised, and I was in some type of hospital. The table was very long, very wide, too large to be, a table I would have imagined that would have been necessary for a small child. And then at that point, I'm drawn to some commotion in front of me. And this is the first time I see dozens of alien beings that I've seen numerous times throughout my life that conform anatomically to the stereotype of the diminutive gray alien, 3.5 to 4 foot tall, disproportionately large hairless head. In summary, was my first experience with what I believe was an alien abduction.
Were there any other side effects or symptoms of the event? So did you have any paralysis, sleep paralysis? Did you have any uncontrolled kind of sleepwalking or anything like that?
Not at that time. Absolutely not. I remember just turning my head to look at the strange flying object out, through my bedroom window, turn my head back. Normally went to sleep. There was no sleep paralysis at that time. And I do talk a lot in the book about how that is a red herring very often with respect to offering an explanation for the abduction experience. Because many, many people have, they might have experiences with sleep paralysis, which is very common. But they also have experiences when they're seeing a UFO in a close encounter situation, and then have a period of missing time, and then they can recall perhaps regressive hypnosis. They were taken on board a UFO at a time that maybe during the daytime when they're not asleep, they may be driving in a car with other family members, and then an abduction event happens where, that's preceded by the approach of a strange, unidentified flying object. So as I talk in detail about the book, I really can eliminate that as a potential cause in any of my experiences, principally because I have no medical or psychological cause for recurrent sleep paralysis, no post-traumatic stress disorder, no other medical or psychological disorders that would interrupt my sleep, which would be the necessary final common pathway to cause sleep paralysis. But I'll let you ask your follow-up question.
But this first experience that you had and you woke up and you felt like you were in some kind of hospital or some sort of facility like that, was it cold? Was it hot? Did you smell anything? Was any of those senses working?
I couldn't smell anything. The only thing that was memorable was the fact that the table felt very hard, but I couldn't tell what type of material it was. Felt hard to the touch, even though I still had my clothes, my pajamas on at the time. So the only sense that seemed to be something I can recall quite vividly was the sense of the table and the physical sense of when I did see the alien beings and actually called out to them, which was probably a mistake because I called attention to myself and then felt what I thought was a very large hand that was as large as my chest and abdomen, or even larger than that, gently pushing me back on the table. That's what I thought I felt. So, but other than that, I don't recall any strange, unusual smells or sounds. I did recall some type of a communication, but it was not audible. I seemed to question whether or not there were girls and boys represented in the group of alien beings I saw in front of me, and it was made to understand that yes, in fact, both sexes were represented, as if some intelligence was eavesdropping on my internal dialogue and was answering the question for me. But those are the only sensations I experienced during that particular episode.
Were you able to kind of fully move and look around?
Oh, yes. When I sensed this commotion in front of me, I automatically sat up very quickly, and I can recall very distinctly, after just a couple seconds, being indignant at the realization of what I was doing here, into this place which I thought was a hospital, and for what purpose. And I pointed with my right hand, my index finger, directly at the aliens and shouted at them, "Hey, you're not my doctors." And that was when I called attention to myself, and the result of which I was pushed back on the table and immediately rendered unconscious.
Did you see any other people there?
Human beings?
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. The only thing I can speak to regarding that question is that I had the sense that I was in a room that was one of many rooms in a much larger building, because I felt that the alien beings, which were walking in both directions very briskly, were moving back and forth on a hallway in a very large room, very large building. The sense I had is that they were moving from room to room, but I did not see any other rooms. I didn't have any evidence of hearing or seeing any other human beings other than myself.
After this event had happened and the following day and you woke up and did what all young kids do, go to school or whatever, did it go out of your mind? Did you forget about it, or what happened then?
Several months before this, I had started to have recurrent ear infections, very painful, and they seemed to resolve. In the fall, after this particular episode, maybe 2 or 3 months after, these ear infections recurred. And I remember thinking at that time that even since when those ear infections did recur, they were much less severe. It seemed to be milder. The symptomology was milder. And I remember thinking at that time that it's because I had some form of treatment by the strangest group of doctors I'd ever seen of my recurrent ear infections. So I would say for months or maybe a year afterward, I was convinced that I'd been in some type of hospital, even to the point where when my ear, nose, and throat surgeon decided to address my recurrent ear infections by removing my tonsils and my adenoids in the following year, actually in February of 1962. On the operating table, I can remember telling him or questioning him why I had to have two operations. One, I presumed to remove my adenoids, and the other, I imagined, to remove my tonsils. And he just looked at me with the strangest quizzical expression on his face and never answered me. So that's how real that experience was to me, that first abduction experience, and remained so for long afterward.
As time went by and you got a bit older, when did these events start to sort of have more of an effect on you, where you're kind of older, you're a bit grown up, and you start to be able to process what's happening in a more, should we say, a more adult way? When did that start happening for you?
That never happened. All I can tell you is that every time I have one of these strange experiences, it made such a strong impression on me, because these experiences were so much stranger than anything else that happened to me. And as I say in the book, we tend to have the habit of having the strongest memories of the most unusual experiences we've had in our lives. And I just was, as a child and teenager, just completely unable to process these experiences, to integrate them in any meaningful way into my life, until the 1980s, when I was in my late 20s or early 30s and was able to connect the dots and realize that all these experiences were part of what I thought was a fairly lengthy interaction with a very specific group of non-human beings for some purpose, and I really didn't know what the purpose was. So that took a while before I was able to make that connection.
You must have been in a kind of a mental turmoil. You've got a scientific background, so you must be quite sort of logical thinking. Did you have some sort of internal conflict with what was happening and, you know, the real world sort of thing?
I don't know why that didn't happen to me. I was a very curious child. I used to ask many questions. I felt no fear associated with any of these experiences. I have no lifelong trauma as a result of them. Was very, very curious about what happened to me contemporaneously at the time I had these experiences. But just because I had no answers, I kind of kept it in the back of my consciousness, thinking that at some point I might come back to it and try to figure out what happened to me. So I think I was one of the lucky ones. Maybe it was because, I was a very curious child, and perhaps the entities I encountered took advantage of that and knew I would be more fascinated than fearful because of this inquisitive nature that I had. Maybe they treated me differently than they treated other abductees for some reason. So I never had this very unpleasant experience that many abductees had. But having said that, I think many of the accounts I've read about are accounts of abductees in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, when we tend to be a little more apprehensive about the bad things that can happen to us in the world. And as a result, those particular adult experiences are likely to be more traumatic, in my opinion.
I'm just wondering, in the 1980s, the whole UFO thing was, like you said, it was very kind of, if you had an experience, you didn't really tell anybody because people were more like, you're a bit mental or whatever. Like now, it's a little bit more open. You can talk about it a bit more freely. But when somebody like Whitley Strieber came out with his book Communion, and then obviously the film came out, and you saw that, what kind of effect did that have on you?
You know, I've actually cited a lot of his works, and have to acknowledge, and the reason being is first and foremost that I found his account to be of the alien abduction to be the most compelling. Even considering the accounts of Betty, Barney Hill, and Travis Walton, Whitley's account, seemed to be so compelling because he was someone who reacted so viscerally to what was happening to him. And it seemed to be his experiences for that reason seemed to be so vivid and so real. I have to say that the only other account that had similar impact was reading the accounts of Betty and Barney Hill when I was maybe 13, 14 years old in the late 60s. For some reason, that narrative that I saw in Look magazine, the famous Look magazine in America that in the 60s and 70s that no longer exist, I believed every word of it. I didn't know why, but I was convinced that Betty and Barney Hill were telling the truth. And I you know, felt the same about Whitley Strieber. I didn't know what had happened to him, but again, his, you know, his particular story was convincing. But when I looked at the gestalt of it, and I look at the in the 80s, all of the abduction accounts from studies of hundreds or thousands of people that came forward, 90 to 100% of them agreeing to or submit to regressive hypnosis to recover them. You know, the largest fraction of these experiences, much of which is would be buried in their unconscious. I looked at the totality of all these accounts. I think that was what made the greatest impression in convincing me not only that the same thing had happened to all these individuals that had come forward, and I was part of that group. I had to, in the same breath, consider myself to be definitely a member of that particular club.
So when did you kind of sit down and decide that, you know, you need to sort of put all this on paper and write your book? When did that happen?
It's something I really have to acknowledge. I had seen a particular, very well-respected UFO abduction investigator. And, you know, his demeanor, how sober, how serious his tone was, and almost how somber his whole attitude was when I saw a particular podcast, reminded me what I had heard Bud Hopkins say maybe 30, 40 years ago, that he had no longer had the luxury of entertaining the possibility that he was wrong. He had no longer had the luxury of believing that people were not being abducted by alien beings. And that's the impression I got from watching this particular podcast, and it really hit home. And I thought I couldn't ignore this anymore. I couldn't ignore the fact that I thought I had a very important story to tell that would maybe fill in some of the gaps that would provide some scientific analysis that hadn't been done by not only an abductee, by any of the investigators. And I thought I could make a contribution that needed to be made, because along with the reality of the phenomenon was also the reality that the beings that had interacted with abductees might not have our best interest at heart. Mm. And because of that, I thought it was best to do a careful analysis of my own experiences and the broader epiphenomenon of abduction, and of course, the larger phenomenon of UFOs on the Earth, to be able to bring as many members of the scientific community, you know, into our particular a group of individuals, scientists, non-scientists, contactees, non-contactees that are looking seriously at this problem, because the great majority of scientists tend to automatically look away from it rather than consider it as a subject worthy of investigation. So that's one of the things I hope to accomplish, is to get some certain fraction of the scientific community to take the subject seriously.
From a scientific standpoint, state of play with the UFO field, UAP field, whatever you want to call it, right now, and the way it is, and there is a certain individuals that have a certain mindset, and there's other individuals that have another mindset, and everyone's having a little bit of an argument. But I'm just wondering, from a scientific standpoint, even though people are talking about it and governments are starting to admit, well, yeah, there's something weird going on, even though science are like, well, yeah, well, it's still, you know, we don't really know what it is, where do you think that's going to go? Are we going to start to sort of knuckle down and say, let's try and figure this out?
The problem is, and I'm referring mainly to the U.S. government, is that has a couple of problems. One is the problem of national security. And I think although they've abandoned this program of ridiculing everyone who's, you know, come forward with an account of a UFO close encounter or abduction, but they're so reluctant to divulge anything they've learned about the phenomenon that the public doesn't know that may have a military application, which leads me to believe they may have made some progress to some degree. I don't know how much, but if you believe Bob Lazar's story, that it made significant progress in reverse engineering some of the alien technology. And then the second problem, which kind of where people like me come in, is that this abduction program, alien abduction program, and it may be, as Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs have written about, maybe include a reproductive program where human beings are abducted, genetic material is taken, and transgenic beings are created, a new species is created by genetic engineering techniques for some particular purpose. And the problem is the government may have known about this for decades, and there's some evidence may have benefited or even in some limited degree participated in this program. So I think there are secrets that may make it very, very difficult for our government to divulge. And therefore, what we're calling disclosure may be actually much more limited than what we hope.
I had a conversation a long time ago with someone who had an interest in the cattle mutilations. The problem was, he said, the likelihood is he was talking from a point where he knew people who were informed. And he was saying that there's a likelihood that the reason that cattle get mutilated and certain things get taken is because want to monitor what we're actually ingesting and what we're eating. It's a way that they can control and tamper with the food chain, basically, and what people are eating and what people are drinking, the milk and whatever, which I thought at the time was a bit out there. But when you kind of come to think of it, it falls under that net of kind of shadowy control.
Yes. And there are a lot of investigators, Principal Linda Moulton Powell in America, you know, have tried to make the connection between the cattle mutilations and abductions of human beings. It's one that's a little bit more difficult for me to make because of the fact that, you know, so much of my research has involved materials obtained from cattle. The serum is used, you know, to grow mammalian cells in culture so we can study them in vitro. So I've always considered the distinct possibility that the cattle mutilations were related to some human covert experimental program that probably involved the military. In an oblique way, I'm expressing some sympathy toward the viewpoint expressed by your colleague there. But you know, I can't help think that the manner in which the organs and tissues are removed from some of these animals does suggest there's a technology that maybe human beings didn't possess back in the 70s and 80s. So I don't know if it's possible to explain all of the cattle mutilations as being attributable in the U.S. to some, you know, black ops project by one of our military agencies.
Do you think that there is a connection with people being abducted? And you, like you just said, you woke up and you felt that you were in a hospital. Could you be apparently in some underground base somewhere?
I've been asked this before. Have I ever seen, during an abduction episode, any human beings or that were abductees like myself, or were there in some official capacity, medical doctors or military officials? I never have. So, you know, I don't know, you know, how to comment on that, although I think it's possible that if part of the arrangement was our government would agree to not interfere with this alien program to abduct human beings and study them for whatever purpose, if part of that agreement involved exchange of technology, some of that technology may be biotechnology that perhaps the government agreed to let the aliens do what they do as long as they were able to access some of the technology that the aliens used to study human beings, whether it was genetic engineering technology that was much more highly advanced than human science at that particular time when the agreement was formed, or you know, other types of technology. That may be the explanation why a number of abductees have seen human beings apparently in some official capacity, participating in these, you know, whatever was going on during these abduction scenarios. So I'm certainly open to that possibility, even though I have no direct evidence myself.
There's people all around the world have experienced what we call the classic abduction phenomenon, and it's always the same, you know, whether they're abducted at night or they wake up somewhere or they have sleep paralysis and they have things in their room. Something's going on. And I was going to say to you, did you ever have experiences where, because this has happened to other people, where they didn't actually physically felt like they were leaving the room in the sense that they were going to leave the room in their body. They felt that they were leaving the room in some other unconscious way.
I've read many accounts like that, Reeves. The only personal experience that I've had that's anything like that, I couldn't really connect to an event where I actually saw alien beings. But I have had out-of-body experiences. I felt physically palpable, not only leaving my body, but when my consciousness or whatever, very violently and rapidly was rejoined my physical body. And I can't really definitively say that happened during an alien abduction, but I have had those experiences that others have described.
I knew your memory is going to be a little bit fragmented, but did you ever experience anything, any vivid colors or anything like that when you had those experiences?
No, nothing that would be similar to a psychedelic experience.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah, that kind of.
In other words, perceptual distortion,
yeah.
You know, which indicate there was some effect on the nervous system or whatever the aliens were doing. The only thing I recall is during an abduction event that was probably 2 to 3 years after a UFO close encounter, multiple witness close encounter. I just got up out of my bed, out of a sound sleep, and I talk about in the book, I don't know how that can happen neurophysiologically, but I sat up. This again was in the summertime. I was somehow enticed to get out of my bed, cross the street, walk out of the house, cross the street, and walk into our neighbor's yard. I had an encounter. But during the encounter, I did see a light in the sky, and then suddenly I didn't see vivid colors, but even though I was still conscious, I lost my sight. Everything turned to black. I was still alert, still awake. I still had physical sensation, but I actually could not see anything until at some point, and there was some element of missing time during this particular experience, I could regain my sight, and then I actually walked back to my house. But no, nothing like, you know, a sensation of strange colors, like I'm entering or leaving a portal before I'm actually beamed on board a UFO, nothing like that at this point.
As we're coming to the end of this episode now, I think I've saved my best question till last. From a scientific point of view, I'm really interested to hear what you're going to say. When we think of aliens, the abduction phenomenon, everything that people like yourself that has experienced, if we look at the planet Earth and we look at our, you know, our solar system, our universe, I know this is going to sound quite out there, but is it too difficult to think that maybe that planet Earth is one of many, many, many planets that beings live on, and that maybe we are a petri dish, and that everything that's happening, they're the ones pulling the strings?
The other expression I've heard is that we're, you know, the Earth is an alien ant farm, and this is a place where, you know, throughout the biosphere, maybe multiple alien civilizations are studying a variety of fauna on the planet, that some of which originated from the Earth, some of those species evolved here, others may have been brought here from other planets, and that this is the zoological laboratory for a number of, that may be utilized by multiple alien civilizations that have a perhaps a pure scientific interest, or maybe may find it useful to study a variety of different types of animal species, including human beings, because they need to learn something, because there are medical issues that they face, or maybe something they can learn that may inform them about what the nature of consciousness is. that we are models for study some aspect of reality, consciousness, in addition to the, you know, the relatively more mundane issues of you know, medical questions that the alien civilizations may be interested.
Well, I think we're going to leave it there because that was fascinating. And if any more, I think my head will explode because, I mean, there's so many questions.
It's fun. It's fun to talk about.
Yeah. I think we'll do, I've got some more, I've got other questions. I'd like to talk to you with regards to, you know, the alien phenomenon and religion. I think that will be quite a good one. But I think I'm going to save that for another episode. I want to get you back and we can talk about something like that. So before we wrap up this episode, I'll tell a little people about your book and where people can get it from.
Okay, the book is in two forms. There is an unabridged version which deals exclusively, almost exclusively, with my personal UFO encounters and alien abductions. So it's a scientist-owned alien abduction encounters, Dominion Lost. If you have an interest in science and some of the scientific analysis I've done, then of the way the UFOs work, the propulsion systems, what my concept of how the alien implants might work, and you know, my opinion is that they're brain computer interfaces, and what they're made of, and what type of energy they use. Some of those subjects may interest you in what I call a more science-heavy version of, which is the unabridged version with the UFO beaming up the young child, and it's the same title. And both of these books can be found on Amazon by just entering my name or the title Dominion Lost and my name Bruce Rapuano. And you can follow all my podcasts, what I'm doing in terms of my exploration of this particular phenomenon on Facebook.
All of your links anyway are going to be with this episode. So anybody that needs to get to your Facebook or access your, do you do an ebook as well? Is it on an ebook download?
Thanks, Reeves. I really appreciate that because I forgot to mention I have an ebook, a paperback, a hardcover, and an audiobook. It's a virtual audiobook for both unabridged and abridged versions.
Well, that's good because I wish more people would do. I love audiobooks, and I wish more people would do the audiobook version as well. Because you know, as much as I love reading, it's just nice to put your headphones on and do the washing up and listen while you're doing work.
That's so true. I never realized it until I made my own audiobook, but that's very, very true.
Yeah, I do try to read. I've got a Kindle, and I do try to read books. And yeah, it is healthy to use the brain a bit, but sometimes it's just nice to put your headphones on and just go on Spotify and listen to your audiobook. It's just great. But anyway, all those links will be down with the full description, so you can go and check out Bruce's stuff. And I highly recommend you do, because it's not just your average story. It's a lot of scientific and thought-provoking stuff in those books. So yeah, go check them out. That's what I say. And have you got anything else coming up, Bruce, in the meantime?
Not too much, other than, you know, I'm continuing to discuss my book in a number of podcasts. And, you know, you did mention the intersection between religion and and UFOs, alien abduction. And I'm definitely going to be exploring that, at least here in the States. And, you've mentioned we might talk about that in the future. And that's definitely something that I'm interested in. I haven't dealt with it that much in the book, but I would like to speak to authorities, religious authorities, and those who have studied this intersection. An example would be, I think Chris Bledsoe is the author of UFOs of God.
Uh-huh.
So it's something that I as a Christian, I have a great interest in this possible connection, and something I'd like to explore for the future. If anyone is interested in communicating with me on that subject or other subjects, as I list in the copyright page of my books, my email address is dominionlost@gmail.com, and I can be reached there. Awesome. So I'm happy to have anyone contact me by email.
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for your insights and your knowledge, because it's very interesting. And hopefully you'll be back again soon and we'll talk a little bit more on this subject and other subjects. But thanks for everybody to listening, and thanks for staying to the end. Remember to share where you're able to share the podcast or wherever it might be. And until next time, thanks for listening.
Here, the Omaha Steaks Cyber Sale. And there's no better time to score big savings on unforgettable gifts. USDA certified tender steaks, beefy burgers, premium air chilled chicken, and so much more. There's something for everyone on your list. Don't wait. Shop now to save 50% site wide and an extra 20% off select packages at omahasteaks.com. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Hurry, sale ends December 2nd. Terms apply. See site for details.